I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, in partnership with Side Effects Public Media, we're going to continue our community conversation about public health challenges and opportunities. We're going to talk about food access in Central Indiana. My guests are, here in the studio, Shelley Suttles, Food Policy and Program Coordinator for the Indianapolis Office of Public Health and Safety, and Sharana Moore, founder of the Lawrence Community Gardens. Also hope to be joined by somebody from Eskenazi Health. To join the conversation, please call 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about Central Indiana food access. This is part of our continuing conversation about challenges in regard to public health in Central Indiana. We're working in conjunction with our partners at Side Effects Public Media. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Shelley Suttles, who is Food Policy and Program Coordinator for the Indianapolis Office of Public Health and Safety. Sharana Moore is the founder of the Lawrence Community Gardens. And joining us by phone is Deanna Reynoso of Eskenazi Health Center. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It is good to have you with us. I think probably to set this up, a little background would be helpful. So we're going to listen to some fine reporting done by WFYI's Lee Dinoon. Indianapolis's far east side, north of I-70 and south of 46th Street, is a food desert. There are no major grocery stores within a mile of where people live. And as Lee Dinoon reports, individuals and community organizations formed a partnership to fill that void.
A new group is focused on getting fresh food to people on the city's far east side. Healthy food advocate Sharana Moore is one of the founding members and runs a community garden. She's training a young volunteer to water seedlings.
Water more of the ground and not the leaves, because if you water the leaves as hot as it is, it almost cooks them.
The group is called Good Food Connections for the Far East Side, and Lawrence Community Gardens on East 46th Street is one of its members. Moore will donate half her produce to neighborhood food banks because many residents can't get to the nearest grocery stores.
There are three grocery stores that we have, the Kroger, the Walmart, and the Save-A-Lot. There are no buses that go to those stores. So it's a struggle, you know, it's a struggle for people to get food.
People like Eileen Loper, who moved to the neighborhood from the west side 3 years ago.
Because I couldn't afford my house no more, and the rent was cheaper. And that's why I wound up right here. And then the job that I had, I lost.
Loper says she's applied for SNAP benefits, but hasn't been approved yet. So twice a month, she leaves her apartment at 5 a.m., walks a half mile on 42nd Street, there are no sidewalks, to catch the bus for the St. Vincent de Paul Food Pantry.
The bus stop is up here on Midhopper and 42nd Street, so I catch that 39 all the way over to Sherman, and then I get off on Sherman, I catch a number 5, and I take that down to 30th Street, and then I get on the number 30 and take that and then drop me off in front of it.
Some of Loper's neighbors make similar trips. She lives in Carriage House East Apartments. It has many low-income residents, and some have no access to food at all. Carriage House East joined Good Food Connections for the Far East Side to help those residents. Kelly Evans is one of two full-time apartment complex employees, and she connects residents to resources.
A lot of people who come in on Section 8, a lot of times they're unemployed, have come from homeless situations, maybe disabled, and so the income is very, very limited.
Evans says some of the residents last year brought up the idea of starting a food pantry on site. The apartment's parent company later donated the space.
So we open once a month, although in between time we do, if residents need assistance, we'll bring them over to the pantry.
Good Food Connections for the Far East Side held their first community listening session at the apartment complex to get a better grasp of people's needs. Evan says they brainstorm ways to secure healthy food for less money.
It got people thinking about what they could do, and then in their own little groups they started talking about who's going to do what when. Three or four of them, they did get together, and I think they're getting a Costco card.
Buying in bulk together and sharing. Nick Milan, farm manager of Chickadee Gardens on East 42nd Street, is also a member of the new group.
One of my big takeaways from that meeting was every single person who talked had a completely unique story, and nobody had the same problems or the same solutions that would work for them.
Milan's goal at Chickadee Gardens is to educate people about growing their own food and help them create their own little urban farms. But he says really listening to people is the most powerful way to inspire positive change in the community.
It's so important that we deliver the solution that people want as opposed to our idea of what's right.
For 90.1 WFYI News, I'm Lee Dineen.
Yes, that was WFYI's Lee Dineen reporting on food deserts here in Indianapolis and central Indiana, and that's what we are talking about today. This program is part of our continuing community conversation about public health challenges. We're working in conjunction with our partners at Side Effects Public Media. Again, my guests are Shelley Suttles, who is Food Policy and Program Coordinator for the Indianapolis Office of Public Health, Deanna Reynoso of Eskenazi Health Center, and a voice you probably heard during that report, Sharana Moore, who is the founder of the Lawrence Community Gardens. So we've done many shows on food deserts in the now 7 years that we've been on the air. But I've learned when we have this discussion, it is always important at some level to start at the beginning, to talk about what a food desert is first and why it is a problem. Sharana, I'm going to start with you. What is a food desert?
A food desert is an area where people have a limited access to public transportation or any transportation. They are more than a mile away from a grocery store, and they are considered low income. And that's what makes up a food desert. It is compiled by the U.S. Census, and that's how they come up with the area that they determine as a food desert.
Shelley, how many of these food deserts do we have in Indianapolis and central Indiana?
So Sharana mentioned the fact that in defining a food desert or a neighborhood with limited food access, we're using census data, and that's taken in census tracts. So in Marion County, as of 2015, according to USDA's research on neighborhoods with limited food access, there were 46 census tracts, or kind of small neighborhoods in Marion County with issues with food access.
46, and do we know how many people are affected by that?
So I guess there's kind of two numbers for you. So within that area of 46 census tracts, about 150,000 residents live in those tracts, but only 85,000 of those residents are actually affected by, income issues, public transportation issues, as Sharana mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Deanna, why is this a problem?
So I'm a pediatrician, and as a medical doctor with Eskenazi Health, you know, we know a lot of the problems that come out of living in a food desert or having food insecurity. Is that we see the health outcomes of that is there's a lot higher rate of chronic illness as far as diabetes and hypertension. And your outcomes, if you don't have access to healthy food, are going to not meet what we want for our patients and for our communities is to be able to live healthy, long lives. And when folks don't have access to what we're recommending in order to achieve their health goals, it's a real problem for those patients and those communities.
We are talking today on No Limits about food access in central Indiana. Again, this is part of a community conversation in conjunction with Side Effects Public Media. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Deanna, I'm going to stay with you for a second. Can you talk about, the effects on young people at some mileposts on this, if they live in one of these food deserts or have food insecurity, say at birth, at age 5, age 15, and then maybe at 21?
Yeah, there's a variety of different things we can see for families who have either food insecurity or low access to the healthy foods that they need. And so we can see both ends of the spectrum, especially in pediatrics. We can see children who are malnourished and very underweight. And this is often linked with developmental problems, as especially for under age 2. If children don't get the nutrition they need, their brain is still developing. And so that can have long-lasting, long-term effects on the development of the child. As children get older and with adults, most often in the United States when we have food insecure families, it's often dealing with the opposite effect of having obesity related with that, mostly because a lot of the healthier foods are more expensive and harder to access. And so we see as people get older in their later childhood and into adulthood, more concern with chronic illness from diabetes, high blood pressure, and other poor health outcomes related to not having the proper amount of fresh produce, fruits and vegetables, and other healthier options.
Shelley, in terms of where these food deserts exist, are they concentrated in specific geographic areas, or are they just scattered all over the place?
In Marion County, I would say they're scattered all over the place. So we know in Center Township, the near north area kind of lacks a retail grocery option. Far East Side lacks, considerable retail grocery outlets on a public transportation route, so they're really spread across Marion County.
Is the closing, like, for example, of the Marsh supermarkets, does that add to the problem?
I definitely think it exacerbates the problem, but we know that of the 16 Marion County Marsh locations, 5 have been purchased by other retail grocers. So a subsidiary of Kroger has purchased 2, another Ohio-based chain, Regenerative Growth, has purchased 2, and Grace Foods, a local grocery store, which we run Safeway, has purchased the Beech Grove location.
So, Sharana, you obviously decided to take kind of a proactive approach to dealing with this. Can you talk with me a little bit about where the idea came for setting up the community garden?
Absolutely. So in our visits to the pantry for a family member of mine that goes there frequently, we found that the pantry did not have a lot of fresh food options. They have a lot of support from bigger corporations, but far as fresh produce is concerned, but that produce expires very quickly before they can distribute it to the community. And so our idea with starting the garden was that we would grow organic produce and distribute to the food banks so that we can promote food equality for people that have low income.
And how large is the garden?
Right now we have 4 acres that are able to be under production. We have 2 that are in current production right now. So next year we'll have 4.
How much produce does that produce?
Approximately 10,000 pounds per acre you can grow. We've had some water challenges this year, but we've donated over 1,500 pounds of food from our garden so far.
And what sort of things do you grow there?
A variety of crops. We have onions, potatoes, broccoli, carrots. Our earlier crops were greens, mustard greens, collard greens, cabbages. We have tomatoes, cucumbers, peppers, jalapeno peppers. So just a variety of things that you would want to find in a meal, in a stable meal or on a weekly basis in a household.
tending a garden is not effortless work. How many people do you have involved in doing this, or does it all fall to you?
A lot of times it falls on me, but we do recruit volunteers very heavily, and every Sunday between 1 and 3, we offer family volunteer time, where we usually have approximately 20 or more volunteers out on a Sunday.
We are talking about food access in Central Indiana. It's part of our partnership with Side Effects Public Media. My guests are Shelley Suttles. She is Food Policy and Program Coordinator for the Indianapolis Office of Public Health and Safety, Sharana Moore, who is founder of Lawrence Community Gardens, and Dr. Deanna Reynoso of Eskenazi Health Center. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about Central Indiana food access. This show is done in conjunction with our partners at Side Effects Public Media. My guests are Shelley Suttles. She is Food Policy and Program Coordinator for the Indianapolis Office of Public Health and Safety, Sharana Moore, who is the founder of Lawrence Community Gardens, and from Eskenazi Health, Dr. Deanna Reynoso, who is a pediatrician. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Teresa has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Teresa, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I work for a not-for-profit that launched in Indianapolis in November called The Kitchen Community, and we build learning gardens in underserved schools, connecting kids to real food and empowering them to make healthier food choices. And I just wanted to chime in and say that what Sharana is doing in Lawrence is so incredibly important, providing access to healthy real food, and we at the Kitchen Community are thrilled to be doing our part by improving food literacy in the schools, teaching kids the impact their food choices have on their health, the environment, and the economy, and why they should go to places like Lawrence Community Garden Farm Stand or Lawrence Community Gardens. I've had several conversations with Shelley and Sharana both about the importance of education. Educating our community of the important food access. It's an important component to food access, food deserts, and just creating a healthier city in general.
Thanks very much for the call and for sharing your story and your work, Teresa.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Shelley, how many of these sort of responses to this challenge, because that sounds like, you know, it's not exactly the same as the approach Sharana is taking, but it is an attempt at the grassroots level to step up and solve a pressing community problem. How many of these do you see popping up around the city?
I would say maybe every month or so I hear of a couple new more come on board, so we're very supportive of these activities. One thing that we kind of focus on in the city of Indianapolis through Mayor Hogsett's leadership is focusing on alternatives to retail grocery, knowing that not every solution to food access needs to be a traditional grocery store. It can look like Sharana's Mobile Market. It can look like Brandywine Creek's Harvest Project. It can look like a buying club at Kepper Institute. It can look like Tab's Fresh Stop. It can really look like whatever needs to serve that community.
Deanna, while these efforts are admirable, I mean, the reason the show is called No Limits is we ask the questions that are somewhat uncomfortable. Given the scope of this problem, that there are 46 identified food deserts here in this city, is this the kind of problem that can be solved without some sort of coordinated response?
I think...
definitely is a city. When we topped one of the nation's top cities for food deserts, I think, you know, it's going to take a lot of coordination of efforts, but also a lot of different approaches to the problem. And one of the reasons I love working with Eskenazi Health is really the embracing an approach that looks more at wellness and prevention in a model of care instead of just focusing on the disease. For example, it's much better to prevent diabetes and hypertension than it is to be spending time treating it for the community that we serve. Is if we can stop someone from actually getting diabetes, everybody is going to live a lot healthier lives. So really, Eskenazi, I've been very fortunate to get involved in a lot of the efforts that Eskenazi Health has to approach the issue of our food deserts and food insecurity. Having approaches like the Eskenazi Health Farmers Market, the Indy Winters Farmers Market, and then really community-supported agriculture programs similar to what we were hearing about earlier. I work at the Eskenazi Picard Health Center up on the west side, northwest side, and we have a food pantry, a Crooked Creek Food Pantry within the clinic facility, and have had the fortune of also partnering with The Gardens, which is a gardening group that gardens has been gardening boxes here on our property. And then this is our first year with Indy Urban Acres and gardening the front part of our, well, actually farming, I guess, the front part of our property. And we're hopeful to have 20,000 pounds of fresh produce come through our Crooked Creek Food Pantry to serve our community here, which is situated right in the middle of one of the food desert areas here in Indianapolis. So I think each area within central Indiana, and then it looks a little bit different when we're looking at what the definition is for food desert in urban or in rural areas, but having efforts as we look at food insecurity really as a social determinant of health, and having different organizations partner together to meet the needs of the communities, of each individual community in the city and in central Indiana to make sure that our individuals are able to get the food that they need and the healthy options that they need to stay healthy.
We've gotten a comment from a listener via Facebook, and if you want to join the conversation via Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. This is from Michael. He writes, kudos to Ms. Moore for her incredible efforts to grow healthy, fresh, healthy food for her community. It seems like a broader, longer-lasting solution to food deserts would be to ensure that all of our citizens earned a living wage for their work. If poor folks had more money and education, it would cure many of the diseases in our society. Instead, we continue to have a large percentage of our fellow citizens living in poverty with consistent food insecurity, which he puts in parentheses, which sounds like a euphemism for starving. You're smiling, Sharana. Presumably, you agree. Is this, at some level, are you just doing, I guess, in medical terms, what they would call triage, trying to keep the patient from expiring or figuring out what's going on until a more long-lasting cure can be discovered or created?
Well, John, I think that poverty is more of a state of mind, and sometimes you can give people more money and they will still be in poverty. It takes a little bit more education, and it takes It takes some more balance from people to be able to balance their resources out. And at our garden, we are more focused on food equality, but also teaching people how to not be hungry. Because we can give them potatoes and carrots, and then next week they'll be back for more potatoes and carrots. But if we can teach you how to grow potatoes and carrots, if we can teach you how to do a container garden or grow your herbs inside of the window, not only is that going to cut the cost of your grocery bill, but now you know exactly what's in your food. And you have the ability, you've learned the ability to grow your own produce. And so that's something that we start training our youth on, as well as once you start training the youth, and then they start training their adults. because a kid who doesn't like carrots, if they learn to eat carrots, they learn to love carrots from growing them in our garden, they're going to ask mom and dad to buy carrots.
We've gotten a question via email, and if you want to reach out to us by email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. This is from a listener named Charlene. Charlene writes, I want to say how proud I am of Monarch Beverage, her employer, for donating land and employees who help prepare and plant the community garden. Wonder who are the other corporate sponsors? Would love to support those companies. Who are your, I'm assuming she's referring to your garden.
Yes, Monarch Beverage donated 7.6 acres of land to my organization. Initially, I asked for an acre of land, and they gave me 7.6 acres of land. So they were all on board with this mission to grow food for our pantries and to provide food equality for our people who are low income. But there are a lot of corporations that have a lot of unused land that they're just cutting. And that was my spiel when I went into Monarch to pitch the idea that you have all of this land that you're not using. Why don't we do something useful for the community? If more corporations get involved in urban agriculture, we can feed a lot more people. But we also need to have the people to get involved in the gardening process. Because at our garden, we do have a you pick for free section. So you can come out, you can volunteer in our garden, you can pick your own produce, and you can take that produce home. So it's giving people a more dignified free food experience than what they normally get going to a pantry.
What are the costs associated with running your garden? I mean, I'm assuming you do some sort of accounting. I know a lot of it is volunteer, the land was, but, you know, nothing is cost-free in this world.
Exactly. So I am a not-for-profit, so a lot of things are donated to our garden. We get a lot of individual donations. We've had corporate sponsorships, but it costs approximately, our budget is around $80,000 for a year, for the startup year. Subsequent years will be less, but our startup year is more costly because we have to till the land and we have to prepare the land to be planted. There were things that we needed, like our mobile farm stand and a storage container, those type of things that were costly. But we've had a lot of support from our community. And so I started the project with no money, and I am continuing to grow. So the community is really, really going with this whole project.
We are talking about food access in Central Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener named David has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. David, you're on the air.
Hi, John. Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Certainly.
My question is more into the rural areas. I lived out in Hendricks County for a number of years in Danville. And in Danville, Clayton, Maryville, it's really easy to go anywhere from 5 to 10 miles and not see any kind of supermarket. Maybe see a farmer's market, a really small one, but no big supermarket as you would think of it. And it's probably just due to large companies don't see an investment out there. And I was just kind of wondering, what can we do in more of the rural areas of Central Indiana for the people that just live out there that to get to a supermarket, you have to drive 15, 20 miles just to get to a decent-sized city and a real supermarket.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. Shelley, I know your area of responsibility is primarily cities and urban environments. Want to thank David for pointing out, though, that not all food deserts exist in cities and urban areas.
I could chime in a little bit.
Sure.
I'm not an expert in rural areas, but I do know the definition is a little bit different for a rural area as far as a food desert. And partially, you know, it's just a different area. As most people do end up needing to drive because the definition is a lot larger radius for how close a source of food, grocery would be. And with that, an area to be classified as a food desert, it needs to overlap both in that there's lack of access along with the poverty level of an area. And because of the transportation playing such a role. So there are quite a few rural areas that are classified in Indiana as food deserts because the distance that folks would have to drive and for the income level and level of transportation access in those areas would qualify also as a food desert. It is difficult if you live in a rural area and you don't have access to transportation, just because once you get outside of a mile, it'd be very difficult to actually walk with groceries at a 10-mile radius for more rural definition.
Gotten an email from a listener named George, and again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. George writes, "It is possible that I might be glorifying larger cities such as Chicago or New York, but there is a noticeable lack of smaller, independently owned corner markets and bodegas in Indianapolis. When did our city see a sharp decline in such merchants, or were they ever as prominent? Would such stores benefit the health of a neighborhood in both the nutritional and social aspects, given the store provides fruits and vegetables and preparation advice?" Shelley, I think that one can be pitched to you.
Yeah, thank you.
Certainly.
So one thing, I guess we I've had conversations with older Marion County residents to say, yes, there used to be more mom and pop corner stores, and over the years, you know, those have disappeared. But I would say that is the case nationwide. So maybe if you think about some of the bodegas in Chicago and New York, they may not necessarily be run by that same mom and pop operation. But one opportunity we have in the city of Indianapolis this month is that we've opened the Community Development Block Grant funding for healthy food access. And this is to allow City of Indianapolis entrepreneurs, community organizations to apply for federal funding up to $500,000 to open a brick-and-mortar retail operation in their neighborhood that offered a wide product mix to the neighbors. And so that includes fresh fruit, vegetables, dairy, meat, to bring that mom-and-pop operation back to the city.
Well, and I want to pick up on the last part of George's. Would they be helpful in that regard? And is part of it the problem that we think of it as a supermarket, but a supermarket has to have a pretty high volume to be profitable? Is a smaller operation more likely to be able to survive in some of these areas that may not be as densely populated?
So I think there's probably a little bit of misconception there as well. So people think, Marion County doesn't have the density, but we know with the housing complexes on the far east side, the density does exist. In Center Township, the density does exist. So maybe if you think about Wanamaker, the density is not there, but there are certain neighborhoods in Indianapolis where the density and the incomes exist. Maybe it's a lack of, kind of entrepreneurial training behind retail grocery. That's kind of a hard nut to crack and to get into that. But that's not to say that it can't be done or that the resources aren't available.
So even in areas where there is sufficient income and there are enough people, we're still having difficulty getting food providers into those areas.
I would say so. So I know most people think, Aldi is very small and very affordable. Trader Joe's is very small and very affordable. Even national retail chains have, kind of downsized their square footage and aren't making it work and be affordable.
So in terms of this, though, then that... what is the difficulty then if, in theory, if there's a market there, the way capitalism is supposed to work, somebody should step up to meet the need because there's an opportunity to make money.
Yes. So I think that's why we are offering this grant funding now. So for entrepreneurs, maybe ready to dip their toe in the water with this type of activity, we're definitely ready to support them. It's just that you think about where would somebody get, you know, education or academic training on operating a retail grocery store. Those programs really don't exist in universities like they exist for tech and STEM and things of that nature.
We are talking about Central Indiana Food Access in conjunction with Side Effects Public Media. My guests are Shelley Suttles, Sharon Moore, and Dr. Deanna Reynoso. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about Central Indiana food access. It is part of our continuing conversation about public health challenges confronting Indianapolis and Central Indiana. This show is done in conjunction with our partners at Side Effects Public Media. My guests are Shelley Suttles. She is Food Policy and Program Coordinator for the Indianapolis Office of Public Health and Safety. Sharana Moore, who is the founder of Lawrence Community Gardens, and from Eskenazi Health, Dr. Deanna Reynoso, a pediatrician. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at wfyi. Or you can do what Janice has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Janice, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Janice. Can you hear me?
Yes. What's on your mind?
Okay. So my question is about cultural stuff. I mean, food is such a big part of families' cultures. And how do you overcome the challenge of asking families to try food, vegetables and fruits that they've never had before that they didn't grow up with?
Thanks very much for the call and the question. I think that is the not just $64,000, probably $64 million question. Dr. Reynoso, I'll start with you first on that one, but I want to hear everyone's thoughts on that.
Yeah. So we, particularly up here on the northwest side, we have a very diverse patient population that comes to clinic. We serve really a large percentage of new immigrants from all over the world. And so for our particular Crooked Creek food pantry here inside the clinic, we have our dietitian, our nutritionist, once a week will do a cooking demonstration and allow people to taste different produce, fresh vegetables that we have coming out through our pantry. And so as part of our efforts, if you've never eaten eggplant, it's sort of hard to know what to do with it versus if you've been able to see how to cook something and taste it and see whether or not your family would like it, as well as that the pantry is what's called a choice food pantry, meaning that families can then pick the items that they know how to prepare or would like to try to learn how to prepare, so that it's not something that you're asking people to eat something that they don't want to prepare or cook that just doesn't work, as well as at the main hospital at Eskenazi downtown, there's now a 450-square-foot grocery store actually on site, the Fresh for You Market, that's open for patients and visitors and employees. And I think it gives people access to items that may be new for them, or items that they're very comfortable with and know how to cook in their home.
Sharana.
Well, it is a challenge because I look at food as a traditional thing as well. We learn to eat the things that our parents cooked for us, and we learn to shop based on the way our parents shopped. And so it's hard to break out of that cycle. A lot of times people don't make different food choices until they're forced to make different food choices. So one of the things that I've done in my life is I participated in a buying club with Kepler Institute, with their community control food initiative program. I participated in in that program. Now, every month I get a bag of produce, and there's a variety of produce in there and some stuff I've never tried before. Before I started the program, I never tried butternut squash before. I never ate Swiss chard before. I never actually tasted a radish before. So you expose yourself to different vegetables by opening your mind. So at our garden, we also have signage and we have recipes. The recipes will sometimes substitute what you normally would eat. For instance, if you normally would eat collard greens, so now we're going to show you different ways to eat collard greens instead of your traditional way that you would boil it with some fat meat. Mm-hmm. So we want to show you other ways to prepare your produce and give you some recipes that go along with that. And we also talk to you about the ways that these produce options can help with your chronic diseases. By eating more plant-based diet, you're going to control your diabetes. You're going to control your heart disease. You're going to control your blood pressure. And so by making better and smarter choices with your food and stepping out of your comfort zone, you're going to lessen your chances of chronic diseases. And those are the things we also promote. We don't just give food away. We also want to educate our community, because that's the piece that we're lacking, is the education piece for our community and teaching them how to prepare other produce other than what they're traditionally used to.
Shelley, that sounds like your cue.
Oh, yeah. So I definitely agree with Deanna and Shravana on those points. I would say definitely it has to be a two-pronged educational piece, so meeting people where they're at. So as Shravana mentioned, let's maybe just leave the ham hock and the salt pork out the greens, and then that will make it, you know, actually a vegan dish. You never thought you'd be eating vegan, mm-hmm. and all you did was leave one thing out of something you normally prepare yourself. But also I think it is a community effort, as she mentioned. So knowing that when you change your diet, you can influence your neighbors on changing their diet. Not to say you need to, sit on your high horse and tell people they have to eat a certain way, but that if they see you changing your diet, improving your health, that most likely they will follow suit as well.
I'm going to stay with you, Shelley. We've gotten an email from a listener named Rose. And again, if people want to join this conversation via email, they can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Rose writes, "A few years ago, the neighborhood converted an empty lot into a garden in memory of a neighborhood activist who died. No one is left to keep it lovely or useful anymore. It's become an eyesore. Would any group be interested in making a food garden in this needy 46201 neighborhood? I believe the city still owns the parcel." I guess, Rose, with your permission, in addition to asking if there's anyone who would do it, what's the process for that? I mean, is there some permitting that you need to go through, or is there anyone sort of coordinating these efforts?
Yes, so it's actually individual in the city's Office of Sustainability, David Herschel. He's responsible for the city's Indie Urban Garden Program. So he's the one who helps community organizations and community farmers sign the leases to farm on or to garden on city property. So if Rose, if you need help, definitely feel free to look at the city's Office of Public Health and Safety webpage or the city's Office of Sustainability webpages. We actually keep on the Office of Public Health and Safety's webpage kind of a little spot at the bottom to offer volunteer opportunities in the city around food and agriculture. And we'd be happy to let people know that that opportunity exists in your neighborhood to rejuvenate the farm.
If since Rose sent us an email, if we forwarded the email to you, could you have someone from the office get back with her?
Perfect.
Okay, that's what we shall do. We also have gotten kind of a comment, question from a listener named Sue via Facebook. And Facebook, again, you can find us at No Limits, WFYI. Sue writes, "The Federal Reserve is endorsing legislation written into the Farm Bill to encourage partnerships to grow local and regional food economies. They believe this investment will raise the quality of life in both rural and urban areas. While I am gleeful they have recognized this need, I am concerned we have reached saturation on who can afford to financially support these economies. The elephant in the room is stagnant wages." I guess I'm going to come back to a question I sort of asked before, Dr. Inoso, and that is, while these efforts are admirable, do they come down to, at some level, treating the symptom rather than attacking the disease or the social problem of trying to figure out ways for people to feed themselves.
Yeah, I think when we're thinking in terms of health, we have what we call sort of a broad range of social determinants of health, because we know it's not just food or food access that plays into a lot of the issues that affect the long-term wellness of our communities. And so there's, you know, also transportation issues. There's housing issues. There's, you know, whether or not there's violence in the home. All of these play together as far as social determinants of health, and poverty is a major player in a lot of those for outcomes. And so I think, as you know, thinking back, a lot of the programs that we have with Eskenazi Health, we're trying to look more, as you say, at the root cause to build up our communities and to help avoid a lot of these what we would call social determinants of health, instead of just treating, like I think a lot of traditional medicine or health systems in the past, where you wait until someone has the illness and then you intervene. A lot of the ongoing efforts in addressing all of these different social determinants of health are really meant to try to get to the root of avoiding the issues that come from that. So there's a lot of other efforts throughout Eskenazi, some of which like medical legal partnerships to try to meet the needs of a community with a lot of different areas of housing and transportation. And I think it goes back to that poverty really a lot of things come together. If you have a transportation problem, that's going to really affect your access to food. And so I agree with the idea that we can't just try to address something superficially without really looking globally at the issues that are impacting our communities and health, and then working together to really meet and address the needs that sort of are at the root of why we are having these issues in the first place.
Shelley.
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in. So I understand kind of, you know, maybe some of the smaller activities that are more community-based don't seem like they have long-term economic development solutions, but I think that they do. So it's very important for us to realize, you know, food and agricultural businesses can be economic development tools for our community and raise the standards of living. Mm-hmm. So if we just think about it for the state of Indiana, I believe Kroger is the second largest employer in the state. So that's, you know, it's very important that we include food and agriculture in long-term economic development solutions. So Mayor Hogsett has really given us in the city of Indianapolis this opportunity. We're working with the Indy Chambers Business Ownership Initiative. We're working with Purdue Extension Marion County to develop a food and agricultural entrepreneurship training program that would really allow these entrepreneurs to explore avenues for their ideas. You know, it may start as a small mobile market, and you may see it in the paper and think, oh, what a novel idea. If the city of Indianapolis can support Sharana and other programs like hers on getting off, you know, the ground, expanding those opportunities, replicating those opportunities, they really do have long-term economic development benefits.
Yes, Sharana.
Also, I did take a urban agriculture certificate class with Purdue, which taught me how to grow on a large scale. So it took my backyard garden to a full-scale farm with learning how to control pests and organic fertilizing techniques, and also how to secure partnerships. That was part of the training as well. So when we talk about Band-Aid and this type of situation being a triage type of a coverage, I believe that we are teaching people along the way how to be empowered. When they come out and they see little old me out there in the garden doing the work, they are inspired to do more as well. They are inspired to take control of their own health. They are inspired to take control of the way that they eat, and they are inspired to put their own seeds in the ground and grow their own produce. So.
And I use the term triage or Band-Aid. I did not mean to disparage anyone's
effort. Absolutely.
But I want to deal. This is a big problem we are talking about. And that's really what I was trying to get at here, mm-hmm. is that it is not something that's going to be solved easily. If you're just joining the conversation, we're talking about food access here in central Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Sandy has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Sandy, you're on the air.
Thank you so much for taking the call.
Certainly.
I am driving through Indiana on my way, leaving Indianapolis from a meeting, two meetings related to Bread for the World, the organization that I work with. Mm-hmm. And there is a strong of volunteers, including one of our board members in Indianapolis, but also throughout central Indiana. And Bread for the World works with people like your wonderful Senator Todd Young, who wrote a great letter to his colleagues about the importance of the SNAP benefit. And I very much agree with what you're saying about, you know, this is a large, large issue that's very interrealted to education, health care, and so on. And while there are many people in Indianapolis working at the local grassroots level, Bread for the World advocates teach people how to go to our government officials and use our tax dollars to help hungry people and work both domestically and globally, and believe that hunger, chronic hunger, can be resolved in the next 13 years. It's a great goal, and I'm just thrilled that people in Indiana are so active. And in fact, I want to thank Shelley for coming to one of our programs last year. Great to see her and the mayor both being supportive of these initiatives.
Thanks very much for the call, Sandy. We appreciate it.
I also wanted to just respond, if I may.
Yeah, we're getting close on time, so be very quick, please.
To the person who said there are no programs, I'm sure in Indiana there may be some. I live in Ohio, in the Ohio State University Agricultural Technical Institute. It has an associate's degree program in food management, and many students go into the grocery business as well as food corporations. So just a point of information. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the call. Take care. We've also, and I'm going to invite all three of you to continue this conversation after we go on the air on our Facebook page, because we've gotten questions from a listener named Jennifer, a listener named Kelly. Jennifer wants to know, what is the name of that Vine Club and how do you join? Kelly says, I'm loving what I'm hearing today. How can I get involved? George also has written something similar, which is for the grants that Shelley was referring to, where do you get more information? How do you apply? These are not questions that we can deal with in the 45 seconds we have left on the air here. So I would ask all of our listeners to go to our Facebook site, No Limits WFYI. Would the three of you be willing to continue the conversation there after we go off the air?
Definitely.
Sure.
Thank you very much for doing that. I also want to thank you also for what has been a lively and informative conversation. My guests have been Shelley Suttles, Sharana Moore, and Dr. Deanna Reynoso, when we've been talking about food access in central Indiana. On Thursday, we're going to be back, and we're going to be talking about immigration and the American dream. Hope you will join us for that as well. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood, and board engineer Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.